It's February 22nd, 2008, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Hi, I'm Mike Benedetti. Here is the 508 podcast about the city of Worcester, and today we have a larger panel than normal. Today we welcome Jesse Pack for the first time. Jesse, how are you doing?
Great to be here.
All right, and also Cha-Cha Connor, who we haven't talked to in a while. Cha-Cha, how are you?
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm not too bad. And Brendan Mellican, as always. How are you, sir? All right, well, the first, the top story of the day, I think, unquestionably, although other people may be unaware of this, this week Kate Toomey sent me a birthday wishes on Facebook. So I just want to say thank you, and that's the end of the show. Thanks for listening.
Has she completed that other sock yet?
What did you say?
Has she completed her other sock?
Oh, I have no idea. Actually, there was a – well, actually, I think we'll get into Kate Toomey's Facebook updates here later on. I wanted to start off talking to Jesse about a project that you're starting off. Can you tell us about this?
Yeah, I'm starting up a transgender emergency fund. And what it is, it's going to be a small fund set aside. The fiscal sponsor is going to be AIDS Project Worcester. So what it is it's what it sounds like. It's an emergency fund for people who are transgender, transsexual, who have hit on hard times and need help either with paying their rent, paying utilities, or paying medical copays or medical bills.
This is a special concern of people in the trans community.
You
were telling me that?
That
this was a special concern of people in the trans community?
Yes. Unfortunately, a lot of trans people face homelessness at a very high rate. I work at AIDS Project Worcester, and we run a support group for trans people called New Horizons. So the past 4 years, I've had the opportunity to meet many, many trans people who live in Worcester, in the city and in Worcester County. And I have to say, alarmingly, many of them either are homeless or are near homelessness or facing homelessness on a regular basis. And it's a major concern of theirs, and it became a major concern of mine because I want to help raise their level of living and, you know, dignity. So that's where I got the idea for starting the fund, because there's not, to my knowledge, really a pool of money to help people out who are trans.
And how?
Or facing these
How much money are you going to try to get together for the fund?
Well, initially we want it to be kind of a small line set aside for this first year. The first year we're going to be doing this, we're going to try and raise about $10,000 total. So our first sort of stage goal is to put together $2,500 before we start distributing. Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a great project. Let me go next to Cha-Cha. Cha-Cha, you were doing a play this week, right?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to take off for work soon, but let me...
This was a play which is basically about one of the most prominent resistors to the Nazis in Germany, and it was the American premiere of it. I wonder what kind of feedback you had from people who saw it.
Well, you know, it was interesting. So the play is kind of difficult staging, right? It's not like, you know, we're moving around or, you know, there's no props. It's somewhere between a play and a reading. So I was worried about how it would be received, but surprisingly, it's been received really well. You know, the feedback has been very, very positive from every audience that we had.
Well, that's really cool. Did people make any particular comments that you found interesting or odd?
You know, I mean, it was a great venue. You know, it was the Hibernian Society. I've never performed there. They put together a really good stage for us, really good set. In all the rehearsals, the director, Mark Smith, for the Canal District Alliance, has been asking what we thought was, you know, relevant and stuff. And I think, you know, the play is not just another lecture about the Nazis. It's the personal story of this guy who was actually pretty rich. He was an aristocrat. He was a German. And he had to ask himself, you know, in the middle of all this evil, what kind of German he was going to be, you know, and he decided he was the kind of German who was going to, you know, subvert Hitler and you know, and try to plan for a democratic Germany and a democratic Europe. And I think it's really relevant because I think, you know, while it's not the same situation, we're in a time now where, you know, a lot of people in the United States are being denied their basic rights on the basis of a lot of things, but especially right now in the forefront is immigration status. You know, so even, you know, working kind of on immigrants' rights issues, I encountered even in our own community, you know, small kind of household raids, people being pulled out of their houses in the middle of the night, kids being left alone, real abuses, frankly, by immigration, you know, quote-unquote services. And, you know, a lot of us, I think, are ignorant of it, you know, don't know what's happening. And I think, you know, the time is coming when we're going to have to ask ourselves what kind of Americans we want to be. If we're the kind of people who are just going to say, you know, well, it's the law, so fuck it, we don't care what happens to them. Or if we're the kind of Americans who say, no, you know, you don't treat people like this way, and whatever their status is. I think that's a real relevance. And, you know, that kind of thing I've seen touch people. You know, the kind of moral idea of that, if that makes sense. Uh-huh. It sounds to me like there's a train bearing down on me. I don't know if this is recording.
Probably so.
Okay.
Yeah, this recording is going to sound terrible. Don't worry about that.
Awesome.
Well, thanks for being on the show, and so, have a good day at work. Oh, did you have anything else you wanted to say?
Oh, I would say, you know, the other things to watch for with this play are just, it may play again in a couple months. There may be some kind of the play is also simultaneously going on in Germany.
Okay.
Where, you know, it's got a pretty huge historical emotional impact. So the two paths, I guess, may someday meet, and that would be pretty awesome. I'd really look forward to that. But you know, it's another good event in the Canal District, you know, which also makes me excited.
The Canal.
How's the turnout down there, Chacha?
Sorry?
How was the turnout down? That room is spectacular. I'm always fascinated to see how many people are coming out for.
I got to tell you, the turnout was great. And I was really nervous, right, because of that format of it being like a reading, not a traditional play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was worried about turnout because the format of the play is like a reading, you know. I wasn't sure people would be used to it. But it didn't matter. Not only did people turn out, but many of the people who turned out were from the Canal District, like live here, you know, and are involved here in some way, and that was really, really cool, you know. So
that is a great room. It's good to see it getting more use.
Yeah, well, it felt like a theater event, not just for people who are willing to, you know, put money into the district, which is also useful, but people who are, you know, putting their time and their businesses and their residency and their hearts in here, too. You know, so, which is the part that's sometimes more invisible, and it felt like a play for them, too. So it felt really good, you know, and I would encourage them to get a good plays again. You know, it felt great to be in. I was really honored to be a part of it.
Awesome.
Cool. So,
well, we're honored to have you on the show today also.
Well, I'm honored to be being recorded on the show, and unfortunately, I got to get ready to work.
All right.
For nice to hear from everybody.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Brendan, did you have any big stories of the week?
I don't know how big it was, but I think it makes a nice segue from Chacha's fascism talk there. I was really kind of blown away at the beginning of the week. There was a news story about a settlement the city of Worcester had with a gentleman who apparently had, you know, he was stomped, essentially, by a group of Worcester police officers some number of years back. It was a $100,000 settlement he got from the city. And it wasn't so much that, you know, a guy was roughed up by cops that it sounded. I think it's commonplace, I'm sure, to some extent. There was a couple lines in the article, one from David Moore, the city solicitor, who is basically saying, you know, this was a win-win situation for the city. You know, it's like, yeah, we did a good job, you know, covering, you know, settling the lawsuit. And then Chief Jem went on the record, too, saying that, you know, it's the sort of thing that it kind of can't be taken too seriously because there was enough time that lapsed from the incident that, you know, you can usually tell that's not a serious lawsuit when that sort of thing happens. The whole thing was just bizarre because nowhere in the article did it really just come out and say, hey, you know, it's not right to beat the tar out of people.
Wait.
And I'm by no means a pacifist, but there's just something really, really bizarre when you see, when you get to look at your community overall, and you get to see that nobody really cares if cops are beating the tar out of people, or the people who do are a small minority. I mean, this guy, like, the way the story read, you know, and what the lawsuit was based on, this guy was being harassed by the police for months, if not longer, and it all came to a head when he was, you know, pounded by, like, five cops on duty in a parking lot inside of his trailer. It was just, it was such a bizarre, surreal story. When I got to the end of it, I had this really sinking feeling in my stomach that, wow, you know, it's okay to beat the tar out of people in Worcester if you get a badge. And I'm
surprised that Chief Jim would make comments like that. I'm used to him being a fairly, you know, as somebody who has a lot of friends who have had a lot of problems with the cops, I'm used to him being like a voice of reason in, you know, among the police of Massachusetts. I'm disappointed to hear him making comments like that.
You know, I don't have his exact quote in front of me here, but it was his point seemed to be based on time frame, that it was, you know, since the incident happened so long ago, and the lawsuit was filed, you know, years later, that it can't be taken that seriously. And when I was reading that, I'm like, well, does that mean if you know, I'm charged with murder 10 years after the incident, that I should only be treated as a jaywalker? You know, it's like, crime doesn't have, like, a time frame. I mean, I understand from a legal sense that,
there's a statute of limitation, but crimes don't fade. I mean...
Exactly. I mean, the statute of limitations is more just a construct. So, you know, it was just such a bizarre story to read locally. There's no shortage of police abuse stories on a national and international level. But, you know, I think for the most part, they're either not well reported in Worcester or, you know, they don't happen with that great a frequency. I would hope it's the latter. If it's the former, then maybe we are in more trouble than I even realized here in the city. But when you do see something, and you do see something that, I mean, the guy was refused to be seen by a judge after he was arrested because he was so battered, the judge demanded the police take him back to the hospital to be treated first. And it's like, I just can't think of a scenario where, again, I'm not a pacifist by any means. I fully understand the idea of force being necessary at certain times, but the idea of a police officer being the one, or a group of police officers being the ones to unleash that force on somebody, to a degree where their face is so battered that a judge refuses to see them for a hearing. There seems to be something really, really broken about that setup. And to see, you know, the police chief and the city solicitor justify its existence troubles me to no end.
So to go on to other stories of, you know, I don't know, random craziness in the city, I wasn't going to bring up Anthony Mora this week, because it's kind of not that interesting to me at this point. But we got a voice message here. I'm going to play the first minute of it.
Hey, Mike Benedetto. This is Dan Kelly. If you have a voice recorder, that's okay. What I want to do is give you some constructive input. I've seen your website. You've actually had a picture of myself and Anthony Himura holding up a sign for a hunger strike. What my constructive advice is to put the full picture of our sign. The reason that's important is because on that podcast you state something that's not on the sign. You state that we assert that the Mossad was complicit in the 9/11 attacks. That's not what the sign says. It says that Mossad is guilty, that U.S. and Israeli Zionists in collusion with the Israeli Mossad masterminded and carried out the 9/11 attacks. And so that being on the sign, it's important that we would ask that you make it a correction. You've actually misstated something and cropped the picture instead. Just, you know, put the full picture if you'd like and make a correction. We didn't say complicit.
So okay. The call is longer than that, and I just got it this morning, and so I haven't been able to listen to the whole thing. But let me just respond to this, because Anthony Mora had the same thing in a post on his blog where he said, "It is a fact that we did not assert Mossad complicity in 9/11. Our sign, which one site has cropped, says Zionist 9/11 Mossad guilty. Guys, I feel like we're down to nitpicking, you know, the stupidest things in the world. The word complicit and the word guilty are the same thing. I Googled the word complicit. The first site that tries to define it says complicit means associated with or participating in a questionable act or a crime. What the hell is going on here? What is going? I feel like Mora has never responded to our main critique, which is that he's insane. None of his blog posts make any sense. This week, you know, for a long time, all of his blog posts were showing up as being from August 2007. This week, all of them vanished, and then it just started afresh in February. So all the old blog posts are totally lost. So I don't even know. I don't think that photo of those guys is even exists anymore on the internet for me to be able to crop.
I mean, the larger issue seems to be that there are guys standing in Kelly Square with a sign accusing the Mossad of 9/11, and then going on and branching out to accuse Chacha O'Connor of being, you know, an undercover Mossad agent. I mean, there's a lot of issues at play beyond the cropped sign or the improper use of a synonym. You know, I mean,
He doesn't accuse Chacha of anything. He just implies that there's something fishy about the fact that Chacha was getting money out of an ATM when he just happened to be in the same area. I don't know.
Well, do I need to look up the definition of implication?
I wish we had Bruce on here. He could just riff on these different words and...
Hey, speaking of Bruce, Mike, someone sent me... Last week we were talking about his bench pressing. Somebody sent me a photo of Bruce flexing his arm, and I was actually unhappy to hear that he wasn't with us today.
He's getting
huge. Someone showed... I mean, the photo of this dude flexing his right bicep, I mean, it was like the size of both my legs together. But I was hoping to talk to him this morning. I wanted to offer him a gig as, like, you know, freelance security. Some of the things that you and I say here, I think people are starting to get upset, including the folks, you know, on the hunger strike down in Kelly Square. I say we start chipping in and we throw Bruce a couple bucks.
Bruce would never hurt anybody. Basically, Bruce would wear, like, T-shirts with skulls on them and metal spikes and then just be really nice.
But if he just flexes that arm, it's enough. He doesn't need to hurt anybody. He just needs... Maybe so.
I didn't want to have Bruce on today because I felt like it would be too many people and it would make things too complicated. Already this morning has been the most chaotic recording of a podcast ever. I wanted to say two things about Worcester Magazine this week. Let me first start off by attacking them and then by defending them. That sounds like a fun order. So I want to attack them because I feel like they totally betrayed Kate Toomey this week in Worcester Magazine. Scott Zobeck posted her Facebook updates, or he didn't post them. I'm sorry. He printed them in Worcester Magazine. And, you know, these Facebook updates are not available to the public at large. I'm not sure if her updates are available only to her friends or to any Facebook member. I have a feeling they're available only to her friends. Anyway, I think that's not cool. She basically complained about Microsoft Front Page. Like, she's trying to update her website. I emailed her a completely new website, and she could just put it up there and it would be done. But for some reason, there's some issue with this. So she's like, her website is like kind of getting updated. It just like looks even more like crap now because it's sort of mid-update. But anyway, I thought that was an unrighteous thing. And if we ever have Scott Zoe back on the show, he has some things to answer for. On the other hand, I wanted to do something I've never done in public, which is defend Worcester Magazine. This week in the In-City Times, on the cover, there is a little headline that says, WOMAG gets it wrong. WARL explains all. And this is in reference to this article about the director of the Worcester Animal Rights League that appeared in Worcester Magazine, a cover story from a couple of weeks back. Basically... the story was about how the WARL had almost run out of money earlier, and there was a lot of donations that people put in so they wouldn't have to close. And Noah Bombard, researching, you know, what's the financial situation there, found all this weird dirt about the background of the director, like relevant stuff, like that she had admitted or what had she done? Admitted to sufficient facts in regards to an embezzlement case from when she used to work at the Abbott Animal Hospital. And she says that she actually didn't do this, that she just admitted to these facts so that this would go away. But it seems kind of relevant. He found that there was a $20,000 embezzlement from the WARL a couple of years ago. Of course, the fact that the WARL supposedly had this big endowment and somehow it got spent without getting replenished, and that's why they were running out of money, et cetera, et cetera. It was a fairly sad story. I mean, kind of inspirational because he talked about the great work they do, but kind of sad just talking about the, like, weird skeletons in the closet of this organization. And so here we have this article, this headline, which Rosalie Torella, I'm sure, wrote, WOMAG Gets It Wrong, WARL Explains All. And it's an article by Doreen Currier, the director of the WARL. And despite the fact that Rosalie is – I just want to say Rosalie's full of crap when she says WOMAG Gets It Wrong. Like, she hates Worcester Magazine. She used to work for them and had bad experiences there. But there's nothing in this – there's nothing in this article, which is called The Real Story Behind Worcester Animal Rescue League's Money Woes. I don't know if I call them Animal Rights League accidentally. I'm sorry if I did that. It says the facts presented in the Worcester Magazine article were not clear or balanced or selectively chosen and left many readers, according to the dozens of emails and calls I've received, with the wrong impression of what happened. But this article does not anywhere claim that there's any wrong facts in that Worcester Magazine article. It doesn't contradict any of the facts in the Worcester Magazine article. It has a few facts that the Worcester Magazine article doesn't have, but in general it has less of the picture than WOMAG gave. So I just have to say, somebody came up to me and said, oh, I saw that Worcester Magazine got some story wrong because I saw it on the front page of the City Times. No, this is a bunch of garbage. This is baloney. This is not true at all.
Rosalie should get a full-time job as a just a lead writer. Like, she shouldn't actually write stories, just leads, because her leads are always great. But if then they could hire somebody to actually fill in all the spaces behind the wonderful lead.
Jesse, if you want to throw something in there, go for it, all right?
I wanted to actually add a couple of things to what I had said about the fun.
Okay. Go for it. This is a good time. So we're taking it back to the problem of homelessness among the transsexual community.
So like I said, you know, homelessness is really a rampant epidemic among trans people in general, and it's affecting people here in Worcester County as well. And I can really attest to that in my own personal experience. But if people want to donate to the fund, this is a really kind of a breakthrough, cutting-edge thing that we're doing here right in our city. If you want to donate to the fund, and any amount of money will be very helpful to the folks we're working with, just send in a check, send in money to AIDS Project Worcester at 85 Green Street, and make out the check to AIDS Project Worcester, but in the memo write Transgender Emergency Fund.
Okay. You know, I wanted to ask you about something that you and Chacha did earlier this week, where you had a press conference. It was around the fact that the Centers for Disease Control, apparently somebody leaked out late last year that the HIV infection rate over the last period of monitoring had gone way up. Like the rate was up 50% or something, and the CDC hadn't really released this yet. They were kind of waiting for the right time. They still haven't released this statistic, and you and Cha-Cha were down at Graham Putnam Mahoney with Peter Stefan and a coffin having a press conference demanding that it be released. Have you guys had any feedback from people about the press conference?
Not just yet, but, you know, this week a lot of us have been sort of out, and the weather has been pretty crappy. But we're hoping that we're going to kick off a nationwide movement of people who are going to call in at the CDC and demand that they release these statistics, because it's pretty shocking. To me, when you get back raw data that says that HIV incidence in the U.S. has increased by that much, you should hold a press conference or something to let people know about it, even if it's just to say, hey, we are still analyzing the data and trying to figure out what this means.
But something's gone haywire and the rate's gone way up, just to acknowledge that and let people know.
Yeah, exactly. But they haven't. I don't want to say that they're deliberately hiding it, but that's sort of the impression that I'm getting. They've had this information. They have not released it. The only reason we know about it is because an anonymous informant at the CDC leaked it to the press and said, hey, the rates have gone up dramatically, and they're not releasing it yet.
This might be a stupid question, but, I mean, considering that you work in that field, what would be, without having seen, like, that full report, obviously, what would be your early guess as to why those numbers are going up? Like, if you had to guess, you know, like, nationally, you know, what would be the cause of an increase?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would have to say I think that HIV prevention funding in general has not been able to keep up with the epidemic. Every year we have new infections, new people living with HIV, but we don't, on the HIV prevention level, we don't have enough resources and funding to really combat it. and get the information to the people that need it. And another thing is that a lot of science-based prevention programs, like, that have been proven to work, such as comprehensive sex education and needle exchange, are continually squashed on the local level for political reasons.
We're even seeing that here on the local level?
I'm not saying local to Worcester, but local as in terms of local communities.
Right, okay.
Like blocking sex ed in schools and blocking needle exchanges and things like that.
If you were to compare Worcester overall, like say, just take like public education for, you know, as an easy example, how would you say that we measure up in Worcester compared to, you know, other, say like the rest of the region or you know, the nation as a whole? Are we still pretty good in terms of, you know, sex education and whatnot in the public schools?
I'd have to say in terms of the sex education, we're definitely doing a pretty good job. The school district does teach comprehensive sex ed in the schools, which is great. And compared to other states, which are teaching abstinence-only education, which doesn't teach anything.
Right.
So Worcester's doing a pretty good job with that. But as far as, you know, the needle exchange, not so much doing anything with that.
Right.
Thanks for bringing us back to that issue. I wanted to talk about two things, one thing that was in the Boston Globe and one thing that was not. The thing that was not was that Worcester Local First had their big kickoff event this week, and I was there very briefly, and then I ducked out and caught a bus back into town. We previously had Dante Comparetto on the show talking about Worcester Local First because he was at one point the front man. We're one of the front men of that group, and now he is out, and Steve Jones D'Agostino is the new front man in there. And, you know, it was good. There was, like, a couple of local politicians there. I didn't stay for the presentation. Kaz Gamble of Worcester Love was there. He was telling me that Worcester Love will basically holding off on releasing new episodes until they can find a sort of long-term, year-long sponsor for the show so that they're not constantly having to hustle around to get money to keep that show going. So if anybody, you know, wants to drop a few grand on sponsoring Worcester Love for a year, that's an opportunity for you. And I ran into a couple of your friends, Brandon, who both mentioned that they listened to the podcast, which is kind of shocking. And other than that, I don't know. It was just sort of – it was good to see a bunch of people out for an event like that.
Yeah. I was kind of upset I couldn't get out for that. There was a solid turnout?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a good vibe. I know sometimes, you know, you'll get a good turnout, but it's not really – it's people just showing their faces. I was – hoping that they get both a good turnout and people.
I don't know. They had a cash bar, which for me is a huge turnoff. I show up at an event like that and they're like, and somebody was talking about, oh, I had to pay $9 for this. I'm just like, you know what? Like, why do you hate America? Why am I in your mailing list? So that's when I decided, you know, I'm not going to have, like, I don't know. If I could get drunk and talk to Hermes Yanis or something, that would be kind of fun. But I'm not going to get drunk on the Beechwoods booze if I have to pay for it. That's my attitude. On a similar note of, I don't know, bad things about New England, I guess, there was an interesting article in the Globe, I think on Sunday, called Youth Movement. With the startling number of young people leaving New England since 1990, colleges, companies, and state officials are trying to provide incentives for them to stay. And it shows that Massachusetts is number 46 in the nation for percent change in 25 to 34-year-old population 1990 to 2006, whereas states like Nevada and Utah have seen, in Utah's case, 50% more people in that demographic over the last 15, 16 years. Nevada has seen 70% more. Massachusetts has seen 25% less. And so all I want to say is to all the player haters out there who say, why are you constantly dating women who are 10 years younger than me? This is why. Because there are no women my age in Massachusetts. If the Globe gave me articles that I could use against the haters every day, I would subscribe to this newspaper. That's the kind of news I need to have.
Yeah, Mike, you just reminded me of mentioning the Globe in the New York Times yesterday, and you can find this link off of Worcester Magazine's The Daily Wisteria blog. But I pointed out to Scott yesterday, they had a great article online yesterday in the New York Times about a former Worcester resident who has been homeless for some time and is now just getting back on his feet. But he's a guy that grew up in Worcester, graduated from St. John's High School back in 1969. And, I mean, it basically gives us this guy's whole life story. But the reason they focused on him, he had been living in Queens, quite literally in a wooden box that he had chained to a pole right on the side of the road. So it was like this box was like in the middle of a sidewalk. And first, somehow, nobody decided to, like, ask him to move it. It was like, he turned it into a dress. He, like, scratched, you know, what would be the number if it was a building, what would be the number of that residence. Oh. It's this really amazing story of a guy who has quite literally existed on the streets of New York for some time now. And there's a lot of addiction issues and whatnot going on, but it was so thoroughly written. Anyone that's interested at all in issues like homelessness, this guy was so open in talking to the press. It was pretty amazing. You get a really good insight into how this guy went from, you know, your average, you know, blue collar Worcester kid graduating from a really good private high school to literally living in a box on the side of a road in Queens. Really amazing 2-page story.
Jesse, do you have anything you're excited about in the city this week? No? No is a valid answer.
That was a perfectly acceptable really answer on this show.
I haven't really checked out anything to see what's going on, that's why.
All right. That's legitimate.
Find something to do. Yeah.
Brendan has something you can be excited about. Brendan, what are you excited about in the city this week?
The snow, man. We're getting closer to spring. We need to suck in as much of this snow as possible before we get into July and we're saying, hey, you know, I miss that snow. So tonight, I'm leaving work early today and I'm going snowshoeing. That's my goal for tonight.
Awesome.
In Worcester, nonetheless.
Awesome. So. Awesome. Well, I'm excited about everything in the city this week. Guys, thanks for being on the show, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. Thanks.